What is up, you amazing listeners and viewers tuning in from whichever platform you love to get your podcast from? I'm your host, Chronic, from the Cannabis Chronicles on all major streaming platforms, as well as the host of this wonderful show, Reviewing Ruderalis, brought to us by Atlas Seed and the Autoflower Review. Be sure to hit that like button, comment down below, or subscribe or follow along from whichever platform you love to get your podcast from, so you can show the sponsors of this show some major love, as well as you can let us know if you have any questions down in the comments if you are tuning in from YouTube or any of the other platforms that this gets posted on. Now, in today's episode, I'm going to be discussing which autoflower genetics are most resilient, whether it be for outdoors, indoors, and all that. And no, I don't necessarily know which ones are going to be the absolute best for your garden or anything like that. I'm going to talk about some different genetics companies, why it's important to source proper genetics, and then maybe which lines might be best if you are going to cultivate outdoors. And I'm going to talk about some different grow methods that could be helpful, some tips and tricks, and just basically all around genetic lines that can potentially increase your resilience to maybe outdoor nature issues or indoor stressors. So let's break into it. Now, first thing first, one thing I just kind of mentioned there is sourcing your genetics. Obviously, I am wearing Atlas Seed stuff, and this podcast is sponsored by Atlas Seed, but you've heard me mention several other several other seed banks and seed companies that the Autoflower Review does test and do stuff with. And I'm going to talk about them. However, I'm going to make a list of the most hardiest that I personally, that the seed company posts, like as far as they're very transparent. And all in all, just everything that I've taken in as far as, you know, growing these genetics or, you know, seeing online from what other people, and not just seeing online, but discussing with other people who have grown and I talk with them and stuff like that. So in general, I'm going to put a couple seed companies up at the top. Okay, so and select breeders, I should say. In my opinion, for autoflowers, there are a very select number of breeders who do very good justice as far as autos. There are a lot of Canadian breeders out there. And unfortunately, I don't know a lot of the Canadian breeders. I know Fastbuds. That's pretty much it as far as like the major commercial one that most people can have access to. So Fastbuds is definitely one that I have seen out of Canada, and I'm not even 100% certain is if Atlas is based out of Canada or Oregon or US. I don't even know. They post their farm all the time, and I know they talk about it. There's so many breeders and names out there. I can't remember literally everyone, and I never should remember the sponsor. I know how their farm looks. I know their plants. I know most of their strains. I've done my due diligence with their face fat autoflower. It's a really wonderful one. So I know a lot of that stuff, just not where everyone's located. So bear with me on that. And I know I'm kind of rambling, but trust me, it's kind of important. There's viewers from all over, and everyone always asks me, do you know where I can get seeds in New Zealand or Australia or this or that? And it's as simple as there are so many seed banks out there. I don't know them all. So let me just go ahead and tell you some that I know, and maybe they might be able to source to your area. Okay. So Fastbuds Genetics, that's a very great one for Canada. As far as autoflowers, I would put that right up there. The number one spot would be Fastbuds, Atlas, and Mephisto for autoflowers. I'm going to put all of those as equal. They all offer different strains, in my opinion. They all offer something different, and they all have different varieties. Now, Atlas, I'm going to give them a notch with Fastbuds, because I know for a fact Fastbuds does this as well. I've seen their posts. But Atlas, they do it a little more frequent, and they're a little more showcasey with their farm. They really do showcase their autoflowers outdoors being grown on their farm and what they look like and how much they pull, what the trichomes are looking like, terpenes they're smelling. So I like transparency with farms or grow ops. So a big, you know, Atlas really unbiasedly straight up gets a big 2 thumbs up, 10 out of 10 from me. That was a big one. Just in general, transparency is really key in this day and age for me. I'm so sick of the games. If you don't want to show me your breeder operation or explain to me how, show me your mother plants and your father plants and how you're breeding, then there's probably something funky going on, or you're probably not telling the truth. And usually, if you're trying to hide something, there is something to hide. So I like transparency, and Atlas is very transparent. for one, the autoflower that I messed with, the face fat, I put through every test that I could imagine. Transplanting, drought test, flooding it, just, you know, super cropping, cropping, Cushman chiropractics, and then I reversed it. I even sprayed it with reversal spray. It reversed proper. I mean, just the whole nine yards was a... It was just a really great autoflower. 100%. The terpenes were unbelievable. The trichome production was unbelievable. The density of the buds was really great. Really, really, really quality. So I'm growing out the fruit by the foot and another... I think I fruit by the foot, fog dog, and another face fat going right now. I have to double check. But those genetics are very hardy. So sourcing good genetics is key. So... Fast Buds probably comes into second out of that little first place list. And then I would say Mephisto. Now, each of these sites will have deals, will relatively have seed packs equally priced. And then they might have some more expensive seed packs. They might have some limited edition seed packs, all sorts of things. Every company does their own thing, right? That's the kind of, that's the point of supporting it. One thing I can say about all three, I believe, they are truthful with their breeders, and they do showcase their farms. I'd have to double check on the Mephisto, because I don't follow their page as heavy as the other ones. I just see a lot more Fastbud stuff coming off my feed. And I think they're all quality. I've seen Fastbud sponsor multiple podcasts and giveaways, just like Atlas does, and same thing with Mephisto. I think they're great with the community. I think what they do for autoflowers is awesome. And they have other lines that, you know, feminized, fast versions, all sorts of things that are really, really cool. And they're working to make quality lines that aren't hermy lines, you know, basically high hermaphrodite lines. Now, the seed banks I would put up that are commercial seed banks for the US that I know of that I'm growing right now that I'll be testing out. I can't speak on it as of right now because I haven't grown out the autoflowers to completion, but I'm growing out MSNL. MSNL. And that is I'm growing a variety. I mean, there's Purple Haze, there's Cookies and Cream, there's Bruce Banner, there's Acapulco Gold, Gelato, Do-Si-Do. There's a lot. I have a whole mix. So I'll be seeing how their autoflowers grow, colors, variations, terpenes present, all that fun stuff, essentially, that I should be seeing how resilient they are to stress. And they're all just going to be growing in very small pots. I'm going to be doing Cushman chiropractics as soon as I can, strengthening the main branches and just letting the branches form. And as soon as they flower, they flower. I'm not going to try to do too much to them. I'm just going to basically let them go as natural as possible. I want to see what they can produce. Trichome-wise especially, and they're in so-hum living soil. So that's a big key. I can't speak on that, but that's one. And then obviously, you have some of your European stuff that I've snagged. Oh man, what is... Barney's Farm, I believe, is big out there. So that's one that a lot of people talk about. I haven't personally grown anything from them. And I know Seedsman is out there, and I have some Alaskan Purple from Seedsman that I'm growing. So these are all the companies that I'm going to go ahead and put out. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of other autoflower breeders out there. And if you're asking me on feminized or photo period breeders, some of the best ones are more of the private ones. Like, Atlas has a really, really great variety, and so do the other Mephisto and Fastbuds, like I said. And I'm not saying MSNL doesn't, but I like to go to a lot of private breeders for the feminized or the photo period type stuff. But the autoflower stuff, not that I don't go to private breeders, there's a couple private breeders that really have some solid stuff, but I figured I'd give you guys some commercial options so you could potentially source out a good solid pack for yourselves. So the first thing first is getting stable genetics. So any of these companies generally have a warranty on sending your pack back if it doesn't germinate properly. And if you, as long as you germinate to their standards, okay, I'm a very diligent person that if you have trouble, if you are not at 100% germination rate, then you should definitely do exactly what they say. Document the entire thing. That way you don't waste money. If it doesn't, if something went wrong, then you can send it back. They can send you more. You can start eliminating factors and make sure that it truly isn't you. And if it succeeds, then they need to be notified. Now, if it's you, then you know that, okay, well, I need to change some things. It's a kind of a cost of a seed company to do that, but it's nice that they warranty. A lot of these places will warranty at least up to one pack, meaning like if your seeds don't germ, you know, they'll go ahead and send you another freebie. The same pack. It's not a freebie. You basically paid for it. You know, you deserve seeds. But one thing I will say is do not use tap water. If you even are unsure of what's in your tap water, don't use tap water for seed germination. Use distilled or purified water. You can get a gallon of it from Walmart, CVS, Target, the dollar store, basically anywhere. Trust me, I lived in Wyoming, in Alpine, when there was no major store around there, and the dollar store is pretty much where you got everything. There was still purified distilled water there, so you can get it basically anywhere, okay? You don't need much. You want to use a little bit of hydrogen peroxide, 3% store-bought. You can get that anywhere. Also online on Amazon. I know most of you listeners probably have some sort of Amazon subscription or know someone with an Amazon subscription, so there should be no excuse. You want to germinate your seeds the best way possible. And if you're like me, hopefully you'll end up with 100% germination. But that does not mean that you're going to end up with 100% success on keeping your seedlings alive. I still struggle in a sense of keeping plants too moist or not keeping them moist enough, or the grow medium might be out of pH, or something just a little high. Sometimes it's just a little finicky. So I've tried everything and anything, and right now I really, really like the little peat pods that I got. They're just like these little pods I bought from my local grow store. They're very light. I don't do anything but just do the distilled water thing, mixture in it. Sometimes I'll do a quarter teaspoon to 250 milliliters of water of Dr. Root from Culture Biologics, which unfortunately, they are having to take a break until 2024 to determine the future of the business, but their products were absolutely phenomenal. So I'm still going to support Tim. He had an amazing podcast on it. He was very, very, very wonderful to talk to. And it really saddens me watching small businesses struggle in a time like this. So I won't ramble too much on that, but that's what I use, and it's a really great product, and I'll definitely keep mentioning it. If you don't have that, honestly, you don't necessarily need anything if you're just trying to dial in your stuff. So getting your autoflower started is a big one. Resilience to like seedling stress, I don't care who it is, what genetic out there, if it's the best autoflower grower out there, that first week of growth, man, it really is just grower error most of the time. It's not necessarily genetics. The only time I've seen genetics be a problem is when every seed of a seed pack and like of a 10 seed pack not consistently not pop or have the same consistent issue, you know, the same type of issue, even if I change variables, then you know it's genetics. Okay, then you're like, okay, ding ding ding, I'm not going to purchase from there again. Most of the time it's grower error. I hate to say this, but growing autoflowers, most of the time the troubles come from just learning how to grow them. They don't like stress. They need very specific pH. They want very specific nutrient balances. That's why I started in peat pods, and the roots will root out the peat pod and then eventually break that little netting out and go into the cell hum. I kept that netting on it because I wanted it as a semi of a barrier so that the roots had a little more time before they get into that living soil that is a lot hotter, right? So it's a lot hotter of a mix. These are the things you want to consider when even just picking an autoflower, and understand that you're going to be growing and you might have some mistakes when learning and doing these things. So now we're going to get into what autoflowers are the most resilient. Well, that's kind of a funny question. It really does depend on the actual ruderalis used and the parent line used. You know, if I could just give you a list of strains off the top, if you're asking me for outdoor purposes, let's say you're a farm listening or you're an individual listening and you need to know, hey, I really do need a mold resistant strain. I need something that's good on the East Coast or West Coast that can handle high humidity and not be messed up. Well, you probably wanna go with more of a sativa cross, like a Kush or a Haze, something like that. Oh, I don't know why I said Kush. Like a Haze or some sort of Colombian haze, Mexican haze. You could do like a Jack Herrera. Something like that is a really good Do-Si-Do. That's a good one. Those types of sativa crosses, even a good Durban that's more on the sativa side of things versus like sometimes you can get a little more indica Durban where they feel a little more body. But I've had a lot of Durban that is really in the head, and I like that. So just depends on finding the lineage, but you usually want to start with a strain or a line that is a natural landrace and is not necessarily a hybrid already. So, you know, when first time cultivating autoflowers, generally finding the Jack Herrera lines or the Gorilla Glue lines or even like your Purple Haze or I have an Acapulco Gold that I'm growing. Things like that should be a little more stable if they've been bred right. Now, this comes down to sourcing your genetics. You are relying on the breeder. So we're going to go ahead and say, let's say you source from good genetics like Atlas or any of the ones I listed from, and the breeders are quality and they've done their due diligence. Well, then now it's down to lines and what you're seeking. You know, your haze strains are going to be kind of like your Kush strains in a sense. Kush is going to be a little more tightly internodal spaced because it's a Kush strain. It's a Kush line. However, both of those lines are really, really great on the mold resistance, the pest resistance, things like that. Whereas certain terpenes and certain plants, I forget which terpene it is specifically. I think it's like, I'm not going to speak off the top of my head. You know, there are certain, I will do my due diligence to research. Again, this is like my third time researching terpenes. There's so much about terpenes, but there are specific terpenes in plants that actually like will attract bugs versus not attract bugs. So you want to look for the lines that have terpenes that will not attract the pest if you are growing outdoors, or if you are wanting to grow the lines that have the terpenes that are attracting the pest because those terpenes are more beneficial medically, then you're going to want to do like companion planting or partner planting to help just like to help the resilience of your autoflowers. No, even cannabis that isn't autoflowers is, you know, just normal photoperiod regular cannabis. It can be susceptible to many bugs and pests out there, many different things, heat stress and all that. It just depends on the line and where it comes. So to be honest, looking up strains that if you're on the equator or certain equatorial, you know, lines or whatever, you know, if you're north of the equator or south of the equator, looking at strains that come from those equators, sides of the equator, will always probably benefit you in the long run of things if you're growing outdoors. A lot of the times there are many plants or many places around the world that have natural landraces, obviously not all over, but at least within states relatively close, that could potentially be really, really good autoflowers to try out. Now, there are some hybrid autoflowers that I will say are solid lines. You know, Cookies lines seem to be, and I don't mean the breeder Cookies. I mean like the Cookies and Cream, the Gorilla Cookies, things like this, just those types of lines, Girl Scout Cookies. And I'm not throwing shade at Cookies or anything. If you guys are in the cannabis community, there's a lot of things going on with that. And I don't want to go tell people to go buy a really expensive packs and something turn out to be not good. So you do your own research on seed breeders. And that's pretty much what I have to say about it is, you know, I have a modified skunk from Copycat Genetics that has passed all my tests with flying colors. So, you know, and I've heard rumors about that whole situation. And to be honest, I see more positive things. So when it comes to breeders, there's a bajillion out there. Okay. But when it comes to autoflowers, there's not as many widespread commercially solid ones. So I would say stick to probably the list I gave you guys at the beginning. You know, the lines that I'm talking about, the glue lines, your Cookies lines, you know, Girl Scout Cookies, Glue Cookies, just anything like that. They're very hardy usually. Your Durban lines, your Haze lines, your Jack Herrera line. A lot of that stuff, A+++++++. It's when you move into things that are more of the hybrid lines or more of the newer autoflowers, they may be a little more unstable or potentially not as commercially stabilized, right? If they're brand new. And that's the main thing with resilience. When you're growing outdoors or growing indoors with autoflowers, resilience, to it just depends on what you're looking for. When it comes to mold indoors or anything indoors, 99.99% of the time it's grower fault. So you need to check your environmental parameters and just things like that. So it really isn't a strain issue. You shouldn't really have resilience problems indoors. It, you might have some light or heat stress, you know, problems, but most strains indoors grow perfectly fine. So I'm mainly talking to the outdoor growers out there. Some ways that you can help the resilience of autoflowers is by reducing the stress on the root system, which you could do mounds, which is what a lot of growers do, which is where you dig out the dirt and then you mound it up and you create mounds of soil so that you plant the autoflower in and it has actually a lot more space to grow and you can transplant it into there. So you usually start your autos indoors, transplant them outside, they get to big bushes. It's a really cool process. If you start them outdoors, you just have to make sure that you're starting them during a time when the heat and the stress outside isn't going to be so drastic. Most growers, if you're starting them outdoor, you're in like perfect climate. And if you're starting them outdoor as an individual grower and not a farm, and you have a greenhouse, that's even better because you're going to be able to control it a little better. Autoflowers just don't like a lot of stress. So it's just stress, 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 stress. There's not necessarily an autoflower out there that is like golden or key to the resistance of, you know, outside stress. I'd say Atlas does a really good job about being transparent, showcasing. I mean, they grow hundreds of autoflowers outside and they showcase it all the time on their Instagram. And that's extremely impressive. And, you know, you'll see certain autoflower growers who grow outside will showcase their plants that are Atlas plants, and they're doing wonderful. So proof is in the pudding with them, and their transparency is really awesome. So it really is just finding a line that's extremely stable, and that's down to the breeder. So the reason I made this podcast is, in a sense, discussing that there don't let people fool you into thinking you can just purchase a line or some pack from a website or, you know, from some dude on Instagram that says he has the next best fire and it's going to be this line, this line, this line. And, oh, dude, no, what? No worry. It'll be stable. It's completely stable. I see that happen often. And I see a lot of people get taken for money. And for me, it's just, you really should follow breeders who actually have a lot of proof in the pudding. It takes many years to stabilize an autoflower line, especially stabilize into a line that's already a hybrid line, right? So that's you're playing with so many genetics. And one of the probably best breeders out there is Shapeshifter, and he's the one who bred Freak Show. And that in and of itself took X amount of years to put out the proper leaf shape mutation, you know, and that's just a mutation. That's one. You're focusing on one aspect of genetics. You know, there's terpenes, there's bud structure, colors. There's, I mean, everything under the sun that comes into genetic play. And when you're interbreeding and intermingling Ruderalis into other lines, your chart for genetics, you know, that massive chart that has the Punnett square, you know, it becomes more, well, quadrupled to, you know, X amount of traits going out to where you're now having to make sure your lines aren't showcasing recessive traits that you don't want, right? You want to make sure the recessive traits stay recessive if you want them to be recessive, and the dominant traits stay dominant that you want to be dominant. You don't want anything, you know, wishy-washy. So this is why finding a specific breeder is very important. It's not just as far as, oh, well, they grow Bubba Kush out in Florida, so it must be the best. Well, yes, it's a very hardy strain for Florida, in certain parts of Florida for sure, and certain parts of the East Coast, but it doesn't work everywhere. And also, not everybody likes the terpenes present in Bubba Kush. Some people want a more euphoric experience, a more sativa-like experience instead of a couch-locking experience, so you might want to grow another type of bud or another strain. So this is where resilience, you know, what autoflowers are the most resilient? Well, there is no exact answer. I would say finding autoflower lines that either are hybrids that are close to those landrace lines or lines that you really enjoy. So Atlas has a lot of good ones where they'll tell you what they've crossed with it, and the crosses are quite phenomenal. I really enjoy them. Same thing with the Fast Buds and the Mephisto. And like I said, I have a lot of autoflowers growing from MSNL, and I'm going to find out if these things are awesome. But so far, a lot of them look really happy and healthy. So we'll see how they grow. We'll see how they react and see how much trichomes they put out and what the bud, you know, tastes like and all that fun stuff. So that's kind of it for today's episode. I know a lot of you might be listening like, damn it, he didn't give me like exact answers. There is no exact answer necessarily to this question. I get it a lot. Resilience indoors comes down to just keeping your environmental parameters in check and making sure the stress is bare minimum. And then, you know, everything else outdoors is, I feel for all of you, because you could have a healthy, happy harvest. You could have great plants and have an insect swarm come destroy your plants, have an outbreak of something. The world's doing some weird things in a lot of weird places, and bugs are going all sorts of places. New bugs are happening. So it's an ever-going battle with fighting outdoor conditions and resiliences to that. So picking, like I said, just picking a breeder that showcases their autoflowers outdoors and showing you that these specific strains are really good and healthy outdoors, that's your best bet if you're going to grow autoflowers outdoors. So without further ado, I hope you enjoyed this episode. All right, be sure to like and comment down below if you have any questions or input on, you know, genetics that you've run outdoors as far as autos that did good. And be sure to subscribe or follow along from whichever platform you're tuning in from so you can show our sponsors of the show some major love. I'm your host, Chronic, from the Cannabis Chronicles on all major streaming platforms. And I'll be back to do another episode of Reviewing Ruderalis every single Monday. And I won't miss it. See, I didn't miss it this week, guys. So much love, happy growing, and peace.